All right, everybody, welcome back to AI Unchained. The machines are learning faster than ever. The infrastructure underneath them is evolving even faster. And honestly, this week feels like one of those moments where the stack itself is getting rewritten.
That's a bold way to start, Jack. You say rewritten. I hear engineers breaking things in production again. Let's just slow down before we declare a new technological epoch.
No. Hear me out. Today's episode is all about the AI revolution, and not just the models. I'm talking about the plumbing, infrastructure, data stacks, and the economics of running AI at scale. If you get the stack right, everything else moves faster.
Or you create a fragile tower of abstractions nobody actually understands, which, historically speaking, is how half of Silicon Valley operates.
Fair, but we've got some big stories. One that really caught my eye. Engineers migrating entire environments from Proxmox to NixOS and Incas. Now that might sound niche, but I'm bullish on this. This could be huge for how AI infrastructure gets built.
Hold on though. Every 6 months, there's a new, this will fix infrastructure forever post on Hacker News. Containers were supposed to solve everything. Then Kubernetes, then platform engineering. Now we're supposed to believe Nix solves it?
Wait. This is different. Nix is about reproducibility, fully declarative infrastructure. Imagine AI agents spinning up environments that are perfectly identical every single time.
The flip side is complexity. Nix is powerful, but it's also famously hard to reason about. If your ops team needs a PhD just to deploy a container, that's not exactly scalable.
Maybe for humans, but for AI agents, totally different story.
Okay. Now that is interesting.
And this ties directly to something we called out earlier this year. Back on May 15th, we talked about Kimi Webbridge letting AI agents drive your browser. Remember that?
Yeah, your prediction was basically agents will run the internet.
I stand by it. And on June 12th, we covered Coinbase letting AI agents trade crypto autonomously. Same pattern. Agents operating systems, agents trading money, and now agents potentially managing infrastructure.
You're stitching together a narrative there, but let's pump the brakes. There's a huge difference between demos and production systems running the global economy.
Maybe today, but look at the direction. When infra becomes declarative enough, agents can operate it.
Or they break it faster than humans ever could.
Also fair.
And that's not the only debate today. We're also digging into companies trying to become your entire data stack, which always sounds great until vendor lock-in shows up.
Plus, Xbox raising prices, following Apple's playbook. I've got thoughts there.
I'm sure you do.
And a 16Z backing infrastructure for AI neoclouds. If that trend is real, it could reshape the cloud market.
Or it could become the next overfunded infrastructure bubble.
See, this is why we do the show.
Optimism meets reality.
Exactly. Let's get into it. So I want to talk about this post where someone basically says, I've gone full Nix. They shut down their entire Proxmox cluster and rebuilt everything using NixOS with Incas containers. And honestly, I'm bullish on this approach.
Hold on though. People listening might not even know what half those words mean. Proxmox is basically a popular home lab virtualization platform. Think of it like a control panel for running lots of little virtual computers on one machine.
Exactly. And this person had a legit setup. Started with a single Intel NUC, and expanded into a multi-node cluster. That's serious tinkering. But they ditched it because they fell in love with NixOS, which is this operating system where your entire system configuration is written in code.
Right, and the key quote here is basically, the state is declarative, so it's 100% obvious and reproducible. That's the philosophy. Instead of clicking buttons or running random commands, you describe the desired end state in a file.
And that's the magic. Here's why this matters. If your machine dies, you don't rebuild it manually. You just apply the configuration file, and boom, the system comes back identical. Byte for byte identical in this guy's case.
I'm going to pump the brakes a little. 100% reproducible sounds great in theory, but Nix has a reputation. The learning curve is brutal. Even the author says they initially despised the language and couldn't figure out the syntax.
Sure, but that's every powerful tool. Kubernetes was like that too. The moment that flipped the switch for them was a gaming PC. They were on Pop! OS, fighting NVIDIA driver issues, running random commands from forums. Then they updated drivers and got stuck in a grub boot loop.
Which, to be fair, is a rite of passage for Linux users.
Exactly. But with NixOS, they reinstall on a new disk, apply the config, copy the data, and everything is identical. Same drivers, same setup, same environment. That's huge for reliability.
Maybe for hardcore engineers, but most people, even tech people, don't want their operating system to be a programming project. Proxmox works because you click a button, spin up a VM, done.
But that's the problem. Clicking buttons creates configuration drift. Over time, you forget what you changed. With Nix, your infrastructure is basically version controlled.
Wait. Proxmox users can automate too. There's Terraform, Ansible, scripts. It's not like the rest of the world is just clicking buttons blindly.
True, but Nix takes it further. The entire OS becomes deterministic. If your configuration file is in Git, you can literally roll back your entire machine to yesterday.
The flip side is debugging. When something breaks in a traditional Linux setup, you tweak a file, restart a service, move on. In Nix, you sometimes have to rebuild the system configuration just to test something.
But that rebuild is atomic. That's the point. Updates either succeed completely or fail and roll back automatically.
I'm not so sure the average home lab person wants that complexity, though. The author even says they only really converted after years of dabbling with Nix Darwin and package management. That's a long runway.
Yeah, but look at the trend. Infrastructure as code is eating everything. First, it was cloud infrastructure, then containers. Now people are doing it for their laptops and home servers.
I'll give you that part. The reproducibility angle is powerful, especially if you're running clusters or AI workloads at home where environments matter.
And pairing NixOS with Incus, basically the modern fork of LXD for system containers. That's interesting. You're building a completely declarative mini cloud in your house.
Or you're turning your house into a DevOps science project.
Hey, for nerds, that's the same thing.
Fair.
The real question is whether this model escapes the home lab crowd. Because if developers start shipping machines or cloud environments defined entirely in Nix configs,
then the whole works on my machine problem might actually disappear.
Exactly. That's why I'm excited about it.
I'll say cautiously optimistic. But if the tooling doesn't get easier, this stays a niche for power users.
All right, so we agree it's powerful, but painful.
Painfully powerful.
And speaking of infrastructure shifts, there's another trend happening right now where developers are rethinking the entire stack, from operating systems all the way up to AI workloads, which brings us to the next story. Okay, so this one jumped out at me. Within hours of Apple raising prices on Macs and iPads, Microsoft announces Xbox price hikes, and not small ones. The Series S 512GB jumps from $399 to $499. The 1TB version goes up to $599. And the Series X with a disk drive is now $800. That's a serious bump.
Yeah, and hold on though. That $800 number for the Series X is wild. We're getting into that's a mid-range gaming PC territory. Consoles used to win because they were the affordable option.
Sure, but here's why this matters. The reason behind it is actually fascinating. Memory and storage prices. Microsoft says those costs are more than 2.5 times higher than before and could double again by 2027 because of AI infrastructure demand.
Right, but that's also the problem. The AI boom is now making your living room electronics more expensive. GPUs, high bandwidth memory, storage chips, data centers are vacuuming them up. And now gamers are paying the bill.
I get that, but I actually think this signals how valuable compute has become across the board. Memory chips, SSD storage, these are now strategic resources. If AI demand is pushing prices up, it means the industry is investing massively in the underlying infrastructure.
Wait. You're spinning your Xbox costs $150 more as a bullish macro signal?
A little bit. Think about it. Historically, consoles were sold almost at cost. If component prices spike because AI data centers are hoarding memory, it shows the whole compute economy is expanding.
Or it shows consumers are about to get squeezed. Gaming has been one of the last relatively affordable entertainment ecosystems. Now, the entry-level Series S is $499. That was basically the price of a premium console not that long ago.
True, but Microsoft is also leaning harder into financing and used hardware programs. They're pushing buy now, pay later through their store and Amazon, and talking about previously played consoles at lower prices. That's basically the GameStop refurb model, but integrated.
Which also signals they know the sticker shock is real. When your solution to a console price hike is financing plans, that's not exactly a sign of healthy consumer pricing.
But the other angle here is Microsoft doesn't actually need to sell the box anymore. Game Pass is the real product. Cloud gaming, PC, console, it's all just access points.
I'm not so sure. Hardware still matters because it anchors the ecosystem. If the console gets too expensive, casual players drift to mobile or PC instead.
Unless the console becomes the premium tier. Think about it. If the Series X is $800, maybe Microsoft is betting more people just stream games through TVs, tablets, or low-end devices while Game Pass carries the revenue.
That assumes cloud gaming is ready for prime time everywhere. Latency, bandwidth caps, rural internet, there are still big gaps.
Fair, but the macro story here is the crazy one. AI demand is literally raising the price of your Xbox.
And probably your next phone, laptop, and tablet too. Apple just showed the same thing hours earlier.
Exactly. Memory, storage, GPUs, these are becoming the oil of the digital economy.
Or the new bottleneck that consumers end up subsidizing while big tech builds giant AI clusters.
See, I think both can be true. Massive AI build-out, higher component costs, and the ripple hits consumer tech.
Which raises a bigger question for the gaming industry. If consoles creep towards $700 or $800, does the whole model start to break?
That's the interesting part, because if that happens, the economics of cloud gaming and subscription platforms suddenly look way more attractive. And that's where things get really interesting for Microsoft. Okay, this one is fascinating. Rippling, which everyone thought of as an HR software company, is now saying, actually, we're your entire data stack, and I'm bullish on this idea. This could be huge.
Hold on, though. That's a massive claim. Entire data stack is not a small category. You're talking about replacing tools like Fivetran for moving data, Snowflake for storage, dbt for transformations, Tableau for dashboards. Those are billion-dollar companies.
Right, but here's the clever angle. Rippling already sits at the center of the org chart. They know your employees, your departments, reporting lines, compensation, approvals. Basically, the human structure of the company. Parker Conrad's pitch is, if you already understand the organization, you can layer analytics on top of that.
Sure, but analytics is not just org data. Companies analyze product metrics, marketing funnels, financial transactions, logistics. HR software understanding the org chart doesn't magically mean it replaces Snowflake.
Wait. But think about the use cases they showed. Conrad turned on their internal system and found an employee spending at a run rate of $30,000 a year on cloud subscriptions. 30 grand. That's the kind of cost leakage companies have no visibility into right now.
Okay, that example is interesting, but it's basically expense monitoring. Lots of fintech platforms already do that. Ramp literally built a whole business around catching wasteful SaaS spend.
Exactly. And that's why this is spicy. Rippling is basically throwing elbows at Ramp. Ramp just raised $750 million at a $44 billion valuation, claiming they're the financial operating system. Meanwhile, Rippling's saying, no, we're the operating system for the company. That's a bigger vision.
The flip side is focus. When a company says it does payroll, HR, device management, identity access, corporate cards, now data infrastructure, at some point it becomes a Frankenstein product.
I don't know. The modern data stack is honestly a mess. You've got one tool extracting data, another storing it, another cleaning it, another visualizing it. Companies spend months just wiring these pipes together.
That's true. The stack is fragmented, but there's a reason specialized tools exist. They're very good at one thing. If Rippling tries to do everything, it might be mediocre across the board.
But the pricing here is wild. The base SKU is around $20 a month bundled with Rippling AI. That's basically nothing compared to enterprise data infrastructure.
Careful, that's the entry point. They said usage-based charges kick in for heavier consumers. That's where these platforms make money. Snowflake looks cheap until your query bill shows up.
Fair, but the traction is real already. About 560 companies using it, generating somewhere between $5 and $7 million a month in revenue from this product alone.
Which is solid, but let's not pretend it's dethroning the modern data stack yet. those ecosystems are deeply embedded. Data engineers have spent years building pipelines around them.
Maybe, but Conrad's real trick is the AI layer. You can literally ask a question like, analyze our compensation review cycle, and it generates dashboards automatically. That removes the data team bottleneck.
Or it creates a governance nightmare. If anyone can query employee-level compensation data with natural language, that's a security and privacy issue waiting to happen.
That's a good point.
And HR data is some of the most sensitive data in the company. Promotions, salaries, performance ratings. You don't want random managers spinning up AI dashboards on that without guardrails.
Okay, but if they solve governance, I still think the company operating system idea is compelling. HR data sits at the intersection of everything. Finance, IT, productivity tools. That's actually a pretty powerful data hub.
I'll concede that part. Starting from the org graph is unique. Snowflake doesn't know who reports to whom.
Exactly. That's the wedge.
I'm just not convinced companies will rip out their existing data stacks for it. More likely, this becomes an additional analytics layer focused on workforce data.
So you're saying HR intelligence platform, not universal data stack.
Exactly.
See, I think Conrad actually wants to go full platform war here.
Oh, he absolutely does. The question is whether customers follow him into that fight.
And speaking of platform wars, this actually ties into a bigger trend we're seeing. Every SaaS company trying to become the operating system for businesses, which gets really interesting when you look at what companies like Microsoft and OpenAI are doing on the AI side. Okay, so this one is flying a little under the radar, but I actually think it's kind of a big deal. Netrus just raised a $15 million Series A from Andreessen Horowitz, and what they're doing is basically helping these new AI neoclouds spin up data centers faster. And look, this could be huge. Everyone wants to build AI infrastructure right now.
Hold on, though. Everyone wants to build a data center. Sounds exactly like the beginning of an overbuild cycle.
Sure, but listen to the actual problem they're solving. Right now, if you want to launch an AI cloud, meaning racks of GPUs you rent out to companies for training or inference, you don't just plug them in and go. You've got to configure networking, switching, storage, multi-tenant isolation. That can take months.
Right, and meanwhile, those GPUs are sitting there doing nothing.
Exactly, and these are like $30 and 40K GPUs in some cases. If you've got 1,000 of them idle, that's tens of millions of dollars not generating revenue.
That's painful.
Netrus basically says, we'll automate the network layer so you can go live much faster. Their software runs directly on the switches and manages configuration, tenant isolation, all that stuff.
But here's where I'm skeptical. We've had software-defined networking for like a decade. AWS, Google, Microsoft, they all solved this problem internally already. Why is this suddenly a startup opportunity?
Because those guys solved it with armies of engineers. The TechCrunch piece literally says the big operators just hired massive infra teams to build custom automation. Your typical neocloud startup does not have 200 network engineers.
Fair. But the flip side is, maybe that's a signal the moat here is operational expertise, not a product.
Maybe, but look at what the CEO said. Traditional SDN, software-defined networking, isn't cutting it for AI workloads because traffic volumes are insane. Training clusters move ridiculous amounts of data between GPUs. His argument is that the networking needs to be hardware accelerated, not just software controlled.
Okay, translate that for normal humans.
Yeah, so imagine thousands of GPUs constantly talking to each other during training. If the network is even slightly inefficient, the GPUs just sit there waiting for data. That's like buying a Ferrari and driving it in traffic.
Or buying a Ferrari and letting it idle in the garage because your network config isn't ready.
Exactly. So if Netrus can reduce the time to bring a cluster online from months to weeks or days, that's real money.
I get the value prop. What I'm questioning is the demand curve. Right now, the AI boom is causing what the article basically describes. Everyone and their uncle launching a GPU cloud. But historically, those booms consolidate fast.
Wait. You're assuming the neoclouds die.
Many will.
I'm not so sure. There's this middle layer forming. Companies like CoreWeave, Lambda, Crusoe, specialized AI clouds that compete with AWS on specific workloads.
Yeah, but those companies eventually build their own infrastructure stack. If you're CoreWeave and you're generating billions in revenue, you're not relying on a startup to run your network layer forever.
That's true at scale. But think about the long tail. Hundreds of regional GPU clouds, enterprise private clusters, sovereign AI infrastructure. Every country now wants its own AI compute.
That part I actually buy. Governments and enterprises spinning up their own clusters.
And those teams are not networking experts.
Okay, but here's another risk. NVIDIA.
Ah, classic core move.
No, seriously. NVIDIA already sells networking gear through Mellanox. If they decide to bundle automation software with their networking stack, a company like Netris gets squeezed instantly.
That's a good point. NVIDIA loves vertical integration.
Exactly. When the same company sells you GPUs, interconnects, switches, and cluster management tools, startups in the middle layer get uncomfortable real quick.
But sometimes, the ecosystem wins. Think about Kubernetes. Even though cloud providers had their own orchestration systems, Kubernetes became the neutral layer everyone used.
That's the optimistic case.
And that's why I'm bullish. If Netris becomes the Kubernetes for AI networking, that's massive.
That's a big if. Networking startups historically struggle because the buyers are extremely conservative.
True, but the AI gold rush is breaking a lot of old rules. When you have millions of dollars in GPUs sitting idle because your cluster isn't configured yet, suddenly people are willing to try new tools.
I'll concede that urgency changes behavior.
Right? Speed to market becomes everything.
Okay, but I'm still cautious. A $15 million Series A from a 16Z is basically a signal that the AI infrastructure stack is still being invented. Half these layers may disappear once the market stabilizes.
Totally fair. But if you're a startup trying to launch a GPU cloud tomorrow and Netris cuts your deployment time from 3 months to 2 weeks, that's pretty compelling.
I'll say this. The existence of companies like this tells you how messy the AI infrastructure build-out actually is behind the scenes.
Yeah, everyone thinks AI is just buy GPUs and print money.
Turns out it's more like buy GPUs, then spend 6 months wiring the plumbing.
Exactly. And speaking of the plumbing of the AI boom, the next story kind of connects to this, because the real bottleneck might not even be networking. It might be power. All right, that's a wrap for today's episode of AI Unchained. We covered a lot. AI models getting dramatically more capable, the money flooding into the infrastructure layer, and governments trying to figure out whether they're regulating the future or accidentally slowing it down. My big takeaway? This could be huge. The pace right now feels like early internet days, but compressed into a few years.
Hold on, though. Yes, the progress is real, but we also talked about the flip side. Concentration of power, the insane cost of compute, and the political tug of war that's starting to form around AI leadership. When technology moves this fast, the second-order effects tend to catch people off guard.
Sure, but that's where opportunity shows up. Every time the platform shifts, new companies get built, new winners emerge. I'm bullish on the builders right now.
And I'm cautious about assuming the market will stay that open. We've seen this movie before. Big players consolidate, regulations favor incumbents, and suddenly the startup window narrows.
Okay, prediction time. Here's mine. Within 2 years, we're going to see a one-person startup hit a $1 billion valuation, primarily powered by AI agents running most of the company. Marketing, coding, support, the whole stack. I think that happens faster than people expect.
Wait. 2 years? I'm not so sure. My prediction goes the other direction. Within the next 18 months, at least one major country imposes strict licensing on frontier AI models. Not guidelines, actual licenses. That slows open experimentation a lot.
I'll take that bet. Even if regulation shows up, innovation finds a way around it.
Maybe. But remember your AI copilots everywhere by 2025 call from last year? We're still waiting on that one.
Fair. Partial credit. They're getting there.
We'll see.
All right, folks. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed the conversation, share it with someone who's trying to make sense of all this AI chaos.
And keep your skepticism handy. Big breakthroughs are exciting, but the unintended consequences tend to arrive just as quickly.
Next time, we'll be watching the GPU wars, the next wave of open models, and whether startups can actually compete with the hyperscalers.
And whether the hype curve finally meets reality.
Either way, it's going to be fun. See you next time on AI Unchained.